And we're on the record. Welcome back to another episode of HC, Third Culture Kid, where I, as a third culture kid, share my thoughts, experiences, and conversations. Here I am today with David. How's it going, dude? It's been 2 weeks.
It has been a couple weeks. I'm doing good.
Well, you've been doing many different things, no? I've seen your Instagram. Got a new business going. Restarted a podcast.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the business stuff I've been doing for a while now, but it's like hasn't been more formalized until like more recently.
Yeah.
As far as like paperwork goes. So, just continuing the grind. I'm feeling like back. I'm feeling like I'm getting back into like my old creative self.
Yeah. What was holding you back from going to that creative self?
I think a lot of it was just perceptions. Perceptions that like other people might have had, or just worrying about other people. And I don't know, I feel like being here in Tulsa, there's also like a really interesting grassroots creative community. And I think just motivated by like just being a little bit more scrappy and just like not worrying about like, yeah, just throwing everything out the window.
So you didn't want to let your creative self be yourself because you were worried like that people would have perceptions about you that you wouldn't like?
Not necessarily that. I think it was just really not doing the things that I enjoyed doing, but doing the things that other people enjoyed that I was doing.
Oh, so it's the current things that you were doing that other people enjoy, and you kind of invested your energy into that instead of other things that maybe you enjoyed, but maybe not so much other people enjoyed as much.
Yeah.
Oh, like what things that you enjoyed and not that you did that other people enjoyed that didn't give you as much energy?
I mean, even just the way that I was normally creating just like YouTube videos and content and stuff, like I enjoyed it to a degree, but like there was just a lot of like the CrossFit industry, which is where I kind of made most of my content, it's very stale. There's not a lot of like, and I hate using this term, but like there's not a whole lot of like drama or like contrast, or like everybody's just kind of like trying to fit in. And I was just kind of tired of that. And I just kind of want to make stuff based off of like what I enjoy and what I want, not necessarily because like, oh, this is where the industry is going, and so like you need to do X, Y, Z in order to kind of like fit in with everybody else.
Yeah, I see. So you were still creating content, but not maybe the kind of content that you wanted to create and you enjoy as much creating.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice. But it all happened like within the past week, relaunching the podcast. Or didn't the business kind of, you advertise the business a little bit more last week too? So it kind of happened in like a hurricane.
No, just more of just like actually talking about it. But like I've been doing this since like last year.
The business.
A little bit more casually. Like, well, I don't even want to say casually, but like it was just more of like, oh, this is just something I'm doing as like just like a side hustle or whatever. And then after I moved to Tulsa, last summer I formalized all the business documents. And then like with the podcast, I started recording the podcast like before I came to California, actually. I was doing filming an episode a week. Yeah.
No, I saw an episode, but then I think your last episode before this one, that's called The Reset, which I listened to.
Yeah.
Very nice. But the last one before that one was like in 2019 or something, right? That was the last one that I saw that was published.
Yeah, that was a very long time ago, yeah.
Right. But you didn't film in between 2019 and this most recent episode, right?
Not podcast-wise, no.
Not podcast-wise. Right. No. But it was like maybe YouTube videos and whatnot.
Yeah.
Okay. What business, in getting those business papers drawn up, what service did you use, if you could share? Was it like one of those online services like Rocket Lawyer? I don't know if it's called Rocket Lawyer. That's Rocket Mortgage, sorry. LegalZoom. Was it one of those?
I use LegalZoom and I wouldn't do it again, to be quite honest.
Why?
The amount of time that it took to get the paperwork back was the first issue. Really? It was just a really slow process. And I think for how much I spent, I think honestly, I could have probably done it myself.
How much did you spend, if you don't mind me asking?
It was like $600.
Is that that expensive for to set up a business?
It's so not.
It's not expensive, right? That's not bad. That's not bad. But you're having lawyers actually draw up the paperwork.
That was the thing. I think it was just more of the standpoint of like, oh, if this isn't like formatted the right way, then I don't want anybody to come back after me and just be like, hey, like you're doing something wrong. And so
you
I think
one wrong word and that could cost you a lot.
Yeah. You know? But for being set, like being a smaller business, like it's not like, I don't think in the grand scheme of things, it would have been that big of an issue. As far as setbacks.
But if you grew, then you'd be getting more attention and then your legal defenses would probably have to be quite strong because people would want to target you more if you get bigger.
Yeah.
Interesting. So how long did it take from start to finish for LegalZoom to get the paperwork back to you? We're rating LegalZoom right now. We're not sponsored by them whatsoever, but I'm curious about their services, especially also as I go to law school.
Yeah, it was about a month, I think.
Month?
Yeah.
That's not bad. Wow, you're pretty impatient.
I guess so. I don't know.
Is that too long? And I mean, I guess we have to standardize that. But is that too long, even based on the standard amount of time that it takes?
I mean, I probably could have submitted everything a lot quicker because there's some components where it's like a little bit of back and forth where like they would have to like call me to ask me some questions and stuff. And then they had to like pause for like a week or whatever because of like there was like a mistake in the paperwork. So like, that's where I think like, again, if I would have just submitted myself, it probably would have been a lot quicker as far as like me just getting stuff done. I don't know. That's just, I'm a little impatient. I admit that.
Nice. Well, you still got it up and running. All in all, it doesn't sound that bad based on the facts you were telling me. $600, got your paperwork done in the month. Doesn't seem that bad.
Yeah.
How's the business been doing? So it's called hypekit.co.
Yeah.
Is that the website?
Hype and then, kit,
yeah. And you're selling highly curated or just curated shoes.
Yeah. Meaning, just shoes, apparel, sneaker, like, accessories and stuff like that. And just kind of, I guess it's just kind of like an exploration into like the things that I've always been interested in and like a, just expressing that through this. This business and stuff. So I really want to really like capture that. So I'm working on a few projects underneath that right now. A little bit more creative with regards to just designing things and just kind of getting back into that. Cause I used to do that a lot actually. Back when I was like younger in college and stuff, designing, I did some like merch for like bands and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And you enjoyed that.
But yeah,
you're not designing these shoes, right? You are buying these shoes and then you're like collecting these shoes and then you're reselling them kind of, right?
I'm a scalper, yeah.
Scalper, what is that?
Like
a scavenger.
Buy low, sell high.
Buy low, sell high, right? You're right. But that's how people. And even in the finance industry, we make money. We buy a stock that's low price and then sell it high.
But people hate it, though. I mean,
people just from hate the business model that you're using for shoes.
Yeah, because like people are like, oh, well, like you're taking advantage of like the situation and stuff. But it's like, it's not my fault that the brand only made, 10,000 pairs of a shoe and I was able to get one and now I'm selling it. That's not my fault. That's the brand that should have produced more.
Yeah, why do they care? If they're not buying the shoe, I mean, if someone's willing to pay for the shoe, then as long as you're not deceiving the folks, then you're good. If somebody's willing to buy something, buy that shoe, then what does it matter that other people have to share any hate on it?
I think it's just a lot of like, oh, you're killing the culture type of mentality.
What culture?
Like the sneaker culture.
It's like a embedded thing in the sneaker culture that you can't sell at a higher price.
No, but it's just kind of like, it's almost like you're kind of like a snake for like selling stuff way more than it actually costs. at retail price. It's kind of like the same thing with like the graphics cards, people getting upset that like graphics cards are getting marked up. You know, a shoe will retail for for example, like I bought a t-shirt once for like $65 and I sold it for like $400. And so like people are like, oh, why'd you sell it? Like, why do you do that? You know, like you should have just, you know.
What was the time period that was elapsed between the time you bought that shirt and then when you sold it? Was it a matter of less than a year?
Yeah, it was like,
wow,
3 weeks maybe.
Yeah, you would think that something like wine, if you buy something when it's really recent and then you let it age, then it increases in value. So like the more that time elapses, kind of the rarity of that item increases.
Yeah.
But in your case, you didn't. The rarity of the item wasn't like you didn't drive the rarity of the item by letting time pass either. So,
yeah.
But the reason you sold that was because, I mean, it's the same logic for like PlayStation 5s.
Yeah, and I did the same thing too.
Yeah, low supply and then mark it up. I mean, the market is just going to, if it's open for everyone, somebody might come in and just buy it. Just let the market work by itself.
I mean, I think the other complaint too is like, oh, well, like, what about the kids and stuff? But
what
it's kids?
The kids like, that make the sneakers?
No, that like want it. For example, like a PS5. Like, I don't know if you heard about the anti-Grinch bill.
What? No.
So this is a bill that's being proposed by Congress to prevent or limit scalpers' ability to like purchase things quick. Like a lot of people, and I admit myself that like there's software that you can purchase that is basically like autofill software. So like you go to the site and then it inputs your information pretty quickly, faster than you could like type it. And so a lot of people are like complaining and saying like, oh, like you shouldn't be able to use any sort of like automation to buy something quickly.
Oh, so you can put your name down on a list or something and then make sure you get it?
Yeah. And even purchase it too. So
they're trying I don't know about that. That's what people do in like hedge fund companies as well, to like buy stuff.
People automate stuff really stock fast. Purchases.
Yeah, people automate stock purchases. But I can't see that there's sort of resource inequality issue at play here too. Like people who don't have access to that sort of software and autofill technology then are disadvantaged.
It's available. It's not that's the thing. It's like it's not.
But it's not as accessible.
No, it's accessible. Like a lot of these
supplies constrained. No, if you use autofill software, then you're gonna have quicker access to it. So it's not gonna be as accessible as someone.
It depends on the developer. Some developers will limit the number of licenses available. Other developers will, you know, like the one I use specifically, it's like
for the autofill.
It's like $50 a month to be a part of the group to get access.
But I don't know if you're refuting my point or making my point. So you're paying additional resources that somebody might not have to be able to purchase an item. So that inequality exists and is being solidified because you have possession of something that gives you an advantage that other people don't. So I can see the point. I can see that. Yeah, but you know, we can't bar things of value though to be used. If it's valuable, then it should be used as well.
It's the same thing. It's like Robinhood, like all these like broker platforms, like nobody's actually on the floor trading, paper trading, like at least what this last few years. I don't even know if that's even
a few. Yeah, there's still some traders probably. But yes, now that's a lot more like the different options for you to do that without using an agent, a trading agent.
And so is that, I mean, inequality? No, because these, you know, paper traders.
Robinhood is free.
But you pay $5 for the premium services.
If you wanted to use somebody like a physical person, you would have to pay a commission. So that actually, Robinhood is the inverse of that. That actually makes it cheaper for you to actually engage in investments.
I guess that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's probably a discussion that's going to have to look at a lot of precedents as well. It's probably not super simple. There's a lot of factors here. It's valuable, so it should provide value to people. But does it exacerbate inequality to an extent that is really harmful? I don't know. You know, probably some analysis has to be done on that.
Yeah.
Interesting. Anyway, so HypeKitCo, what is up with the word hype? So there's a Netflix show called Hype House. I don't know if you've seen that. I haven't watched all of it, but somebody was watching, so we kind of tagged along and watched it. But it's called Hype House.
Yeah.
And then your company's called Hype Kit.
Yeah. I'm actually going to change the name, to be honest.
Yeah. It sounds like a very, what's the youngest generation now? Gen Z? Well, that's like 18 years old. Gen Z, Gen Y. Yeah. I don't know what it is, but it's like a very Gen Z term, I feel. Hype.
Yeah. Something. I mean, it's all hype, right? Like these items are just material things and people are just hyping them up.
I don't know if you're advertising your company or you're kind of breaking, or you're saying that, hey, I'm just hyping it up. There's no real value to it, but I'm hyping it.
It's just, I mean, to me, it's just things like for me, it's more of a creative express. It's an outlet for a creative expression. And so I hope to do more things outside of just, you know, reselling items, but really creating a, just a creative expressive outlet.
Got it. So there's more to come. So what Hype Kit is today is not the Hype Kit of the future.
Nah.
Nice. Well, congrats, dude. It must be exciting. You must have celebrated or felt like relieved in a way.
Yeah.
Nice.
How about you?
Past 2 weeks, you know, I feel like I should do a journal of like significant significant nano milestones so that I have this log of things that I'm doing to push ahead and the things that I want to make progress on.
Yeah.
But I haven't started that, but I mean, I've been trying to keep a mental log of things. What have I done? I finished this, I'm in the epilogue, but I finished the book Outliers. It was an audio book.
Oh, by Malcolm Gladwell.
About Malcolm Gladwell. Honestly, it was a lot of words, but I think I could summarize the book in two sentences or maybe even one. Success depends on many factors that are beyond your control, including the year you were born, the environment around you, the resource that you have available to you, period. That really is mostly the book. They just give stories about how success came about. Talk about Bill Gates, and one of the reasons for his success was because he had early access to a computer where a lot of children didn't, and he was born like right at the right time so that when he came of age, 18 or whatnot, like software like this gonna be an emerging technology, but it wasn't as established as it is now. So the timing of when he was born played a huge part in successes. So that's one story, but just a lot of collections of stories that kind of support my one sentence summary. That success is largely attributable to external circumstances.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I finished that book, but I'm the epilogue. But I mean, if you're at the epilogue, I consider that I finished the book pretty much. But this epilogue is 1 hour long. So, you know, maybe there's still a lot of the book. Maybe I should read that epilogue. So I did that. What else? Well, I mean, I've been doing the podcast.
Been golfing.
Yeah, I don't call that progress and something. It's just fun. I don't know if it's like a milestone or anything, but I have been golfing. I'm getting pretty confident in my swings now. Just came back from golfing today as well, and I picked up some tips that I think really made my swing more consistent. How do you golf?
No, I tried, but I was never successful at it.
You need patience. In golf, you need patience.
Exactly what I don't have.
For you to do weightlifting and powerlifting, you must have patience as well, right? You're not going to see instant results, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I when it comes to sports, I'm willing
golf
to.
Golf is a sport. Yeah, golf is a sport.
But for me, golf is so technical, and I'm not a very good eye-hand coordinated person, that it's just never been something that like I felt like it's worth investing the extra effort into.
Got it. Okay, well, I won't try to convince you in golf. Golf is a hard sport to convince somebody to take on.
I know, but when I say I tried, like I had golf clubs, like I had a full set, like I tried, I would go to the ranges and stuff like that, but it just didn't like, It just wasn't clicking. But I'll go to the ranges and like hit golf balls and stuff. But like to play a full round, I don't know if I could do that.
Oh, yeah. You need some practice to do that. But I mean, it's a long-term investment for me. When I'm in my 60s and my joints are weak and I still want to play a sport, then golf is going to be my pastime. I think it's going to be very big in my happiness and the quality of my life.
Yeah.
It's pretty much hiking with great views, but while hitting a ball. I mean, that's really fun, I think. Especially if you retire and you have nothing to do, this is going to be a great way to pass time. Anyway, that's my small pitch. But yeah, so been golfing. What else? I mean, work. You and I have been working. Well, yeah. I got this book called Mind Over Mood. I don't know if you've heard this book. It's like a self-cognitive behavioral therapy book. It's been on some website publications. When I look at like, what are some best self-help therapy books? This is often listed in those websites, but it's written by these two people who presumably have PhDs and presumably do something in psychology. Hmm. And they just walk you through different cognitive behavioral therapy concepts, techniques. So yeah, I'm going to read that. That's
interesting.
Yeah, I'm going to read that. I'm of the mind that, you know, a therapist can help you really with if you go through therapy. And we can really change that word, I feel. We should call it mental exercising at some point. Because I think therapy can be helpful for like almost everyone. It's just you're just getting in touch with your mental state, your emotional state a little bit, and then you're just improving certain areas. And you're working on it. It doesn't have to be something that's debilitating, even like something that you want to work on, whether it's you feeling sad at a certain point, like those things therapy can help with, like just normal average sadness as well. But I'm of the mind that, you know, a therapist can help guide you in how you get better, but you know your feelings and how you feel the best. There's so many nuances in how you feel that a therapist might not be able to capture. And you're the closest person to that knowledge. So if you also have the tools, maybe you have a shot at really making some therapy that really works for you and customized, like much more customized to you, because a therapist is a third party. So they might not be as familiar with the knowledge that may make therapy the most effective for you. So I'll try it out, but I don't know. I mean, that's just a very casual theory. But I did hear that self-help therapy can be harmful as well, because if you do it the wrong way, then you can maybe exacerbate the issue. So that's something to watch out for.
Yeah, I think the biggest difference there, I've been seeing a therapist for a few years now. Mm-hmm. I think it's just, there's an element of like, when you go to therapy, either you, like you said, right? Like you have the knowledge and you can either be extremely open with the situation or you could be extremely closed off. And so experience is really dictated on how serious and how motivated you are to resolving or coming to terms or just kind of dealing with whatever things you're trying to deal with in life.
So that's a dependency too, which you have more control over if you're working with yourself, because you know everything. This element of being open and closed, I guess you can be dishonest with yourself, but that's less likely with yourself than it is to a third party. So
I don't know. I think it's a lot. I think if you do it by yourself, it's very easy to be
dishonest
with yourself. Whereas if you're seeing a therapist, they're going to ask you specific questions. That's and possible. Yes, you can still be dishonest, but the fact that you're every week or every couple of weeks or every month, you're signing up to meet with this person, it's like, you might as well be as open as you possibly can, because it's not going to like you're wasting your money not being open.
Yeah, but I think that's a lot of the reason as to why people don't even go to therapy, because they don't want to share that to a stranger. At the end of the day, yes, these people have degrees. These are still people. And I think that division of therapist and people it's not there. It's like, this is a person I'm talking to as well, and they're my therapist. And that could be a barrier for people to truly open up.
Yeah.
So I think it depends on the person. If you're somebody that like you, like you, it has like an open heart and is going to go to a therapist and then be willing to share, because you realize, what's the point of doing this? I'm not going to be open. Then that probably, therapy is probably a good option, in my opinion. But if you're very closed off and you're not going to be seeing anybody at all because you just don't want to share and you don't want to admit your weaknesses and what you're feeling, then something's better than nothing. So maybe picking up a self-therapy book and trying to learn about these things is a good idea. Anyway,
yeah,
that was kind of my week, just reading these things, playing golf, writing a book as well. I'm writing a book.
This guy is writing a book.
I have a good amount of pages, but I don't. I think I'll be done a good first draft maybe by June.
Really?
I think so. It's not. Once I have some good headway, I'll tell you what kind of book it is. But yeah, I've been trying to spend time writing this book as well too.
Can I just say, this is a very different HD. Can I say HD? HD.
Yeah.
Then the first time we started talking about like podcasts and all that kind of stuff. So this is
really, how so?
I feel like this is a milestone, because I would have never pictured you as somebody that would want, and maybe that's just because I didn't know you to that extent yet, but I would have never pictured you as somebody who would have wanted to write a book.
Oh, write a book? Really?
Yeah.
I don't remember what dream was my first dream, but one of my first dreams when I was like fifth grade or younger was being an author. I read Harry Potter before I was in fifth grade, and I just love that you create such an intricate world and create an imagination for people to live in and dwell in by writing a book. I thought it was pretty magical. So that was an early dream of mine. So I did have, an early rooted inclination to write. But that's not why I'm writing this particular book. There's another reason, but okay. I will share more details afterwards when I have made a little bit more headway. But it's a struggle, dude. Having a full-time demanding job and doing all these things is a little tough. Yeah.
I always joke with my girlfriend, I'm like, I'll sleep when I'm dead, just with like everything that I'm doing. And it's,
yes,
you know, sometimes I get to that point where it's just like, sometimes like I don't sleep. And I think you're like this too, but sometimes I don't sleep until like 1 o'clock in the morning.
Dude, I was worse. I didn't sleep until like 3 a.m. in the morning many times.
Really?
Many, many nights. And I am now concerned that I have declined cognitively. Yeah, to a certain point. So I'm like trying to be really good about my sleep this year.
Yeah.
To get my brain feeling fresh. So I'm just trying to be really good with like work. For me, is really going to stop at 6 p.m. or at most 7 p.m. And then I'm going to do something else. And then I'll either work on editing this podcast or writing the book, working out or something. And then making sure that I get in bed by like 10 or 11. So I'm trying to be really good about that. It's just really about setting borders that has really helped me. Because you said you'll sleep when you're dead. That, I think, I had a different motto. Not a motto, but a different approach to like, okay, this is how I'm going to get everything done. And my approach was like, there's 24 hours in a day. I can use all of them. And then, I can use all the, I can use those hours. Maybe, you know, I'll take off some hours. But I have, you know, it's not that if I don't sleep at 12, then I can, you know, work past 12 to compensate and do these other things as well.
Yeah.
So that sort of approach, I think, really deprived me of sleep, which I think I need to change and shift from. But I think it also forces me to be more efficient with my production. So,
yeah,
I'm going to try that. Yeah, I think it's important that we get sleep. I don't think this "I'll sleep when I die" approach is healthy either.
No, I don't.
If you, God forbid, die early, then you know you're gonna have to stop doing what you're doing. But being an expression for like, okay, you've taken it way too far, and you're really, really, your health wise, you're just compromised.
Yeah, and I guess to preface or aforementioned that, like, I try not to subscribe to that. I definitely do. I think for me also this past year, I've definitely really tried to change my approach to working as well. So like just with regards to like figuring out what works best working in a different time zone. So like I used to start at like 11 a.m. and I'll work till like 8 or 9.
In the Pacific time?
So when that would be
California.
Yeah. So I work California hours. So I'd work from like 11 till like 8.
Which would be here, which here would be in California, be like 9 a.m.
ish. Yeah. 9 to 6. Yeah.
Oh, got it. Got it. So what have you done now? You're starting 9 a.m. your time now?
I'm starting a lot earlier. So like now it's between like 9:30 and 10. I also stop working out in the afternoon. So I work out in the mornings just so that like I can have a little bit more of a better flowing day, at least a better flowing for me.
It helps if you work out earlier in the morning for you rather than afternoon.
Because then I don't have to like stop and then like I'm offline for like a couple hours or whatever. And then I go back to work. So like instead of doing that, I just do it in the morning. And then that way I can like schedule my work day a little bit better and then be off by like 6:30. Yeah. Oh, I take breaks. Yeah.
You take breaks. Yeah. That's what a workout I think would serve. Yeah. I feel like I need a substantial break after like focusing for like long periods of time, AKA like maybe 3 to 4 hours. So a workout would make sense. So it would be purposeful and give me a break so that I don't have to continuously work. But
I also
that's disruptive for you. I guess that's
different. I use the Pomodoro counter or timer. So like I work for like 25 minutes and then take a 5 minute break. And then you do that for 4 cycles. And then you take a 10 minute break after that 4th cycle.
What in the world is a Pomodoro? Pomodoro timer. Oh, so it's an online thing. Is that reference to a tomato? Oh man, do you remember? Yeah, I remember those timers that were shaped like a tomatoes.
Yeah,
those were used for cooking though, but there's one for focusing. Oh, I see. Yeah. So what is it? What is this? 25 minutes of you just working, focusing, mm-hmm. and then it's a 5 minute break. I see. What is it? Is this based off of any sort of like science?
Yeah, there's I can't remember what the like actual science is, but
Pomodoro counter. Oh, the Pomodoro, just go to Wikipedia.
The Pomodoro technique.
Yeah, is a time management method developed by Francesco Cirillo in the late 1980s. Okay, so it's been around. It's not a recent thing, but I'm hearing this for the first time. It uses a timer to break work into intervals, traditionally 25 minutes in length. Okay, yeah, I get the idea, but what's the rationale? There's no research cited, I think, in Wikipedia. Has been widely popularized by apps closely related to time boxing. Yeah, I don't see. Okay, so not on Wikipedia. Pomodoro counter, does this work? Let's look at that. Does the Pomodoro technique really work? Okay, all right. There's a Forbes article explaining this. The technique is popular because it's portable and easy to learn. Francisco Cirillo, he wrote, I discovered that you can learn how to improve your effectiveness and be better able to estimate how long a task will take to complete by recording how you utilized your time. Yeah, but you're not.
It's
tracking your time. You're just monitoring it.
Yeah. So like what I do is I have a Stream Deck, which is like a little shortcut little box that has buttons on it for my computer. So yeah. I have two different timers. I have a 25 minute timer and then a 5 minute timer. And so then basically what I'll do is like I figure out, okay, what am I going to do today? And then I try to basically get done as much as I can within that 25 minute period. And then take my 5 minute break and then maybe move on to the next thing. Or if I need to continue to work on that thing, then I'll work on it in the next 25 minute break.
So go ahead.
So then that way I'm not in this. Cause like for me, it's very easy for me to get like super deep in the trenches. And so then that way it forces me to like break up that work and take a step back. Just so that when I come back to it, I can kind of have a little bit of a fresher eyes.
I feel like, what if you're in like a deep state of work and then you are so into it that you forget time and you could keep going for like an hour.
That can happen.
Okay. But at that point, then you would take a, you would deviate from the Pomodoro technique then?
Yeah. I'm not like 100% married to it where it's just like every single time, but I do find that it does help me structure my day a little bit better when I utilize that approach. And I'm a little bit more like mindful of just like overall, like just general health. And I'm not getting like super, super sucked into work to a point where like I lose track of time. And then it's like a meeting is about to pop up and it's like, oh shoot, I need to get ready for this meeting. So that's where it helps me.
Okay. I found something. And actually one of the apps I use to use for my to-do list. So this is an article or blog post from the app Todoist.com. It's a productivity app. But it says, what makes Pomodoro so effective? And it does cite, it says some research. I don't know, like it doesn't give me specific citation to what kind of research, but it says, research has shown that procrastination has little to do with laziness or lack of self-control. Rather, we put things off to avoid negative feelings. It's uncomfortable to stare down a big task or project, one you may not be sure how to do, or even one involves a lot of uncertainty. So we turn to Twitter or Netflix instead to boost our mood, if only temporarily. And studies have said that an effective way to break out of this cycle is to shrink whatever you're doing to tiny, unintimidating first step. And so that's, I think that's the idea of having 25 minutes so that you're breaking down, you're letting yourself know, hey, I'm only going to focus for 25 minutes instead of like 8 hours.
Yeah. So like, I could be like, okay, like usually like on Sundays, that's when it's like, okay, what do I need to get done this week? And then it's like each day, then I pick different things that I need to do for that day. And then I could break it down and be like, okay, I'm going to work on this, 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 and then batch it in those little 25 minute, little boxes.
It's interesting that the block is 25 minutes and not 30 minutes, but 25 minutes does seem significantly shorter than 30 minutes and just a 5 minute difference. So I think that's helpful too. Like it's not that much different from 30 minutes, but 25 minutes sounds like a lot shorter than it seems, than it really is. I mean, than 30 minutes.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's where it kind of forces you to be mindful about like, are you accomplishing something or are you just doing busy work for the sake of doing busy work and just being a little bit more efficient with your time and what it is that you want to accomplish.
Yeah. So what do you do if, so you're working, wait, so that's, this doesn't work in 30 minute meetings then?
No, right? No. That's what I'm saying. Like I'm not like, it's not like hard and fast. Like if I'm not in meetings and stuff like that, I try to utilize it. Yeah, I'm flexible with it.
I'm going to read about this a little bit. This sounds like something I could very much use. Dusty really went on to write a 130-page book about the method. Its biggest strength is simplicity. Yeah, books give a lot of detail, but I feel like many books can just be distilled into like three sentences sometimes. Not to diminish the book, but you know, the key points, which gets value from the detail, maybe that support the key points, but the key points themselves can be distilled into like a few sentences.
Yeah.
Interesting. Thanks
for it. It's a Blinkist. Have you ever heard of that?
Blinkist? It's like a reading app tool, like helps you read books really fast or something. And I don't know how they do that. They just summarize a book for you.
It's like Spark Notes, audio Spark Notes.
Oh, interesting. So they probably have to like get permission from the authors to do that, huh?
Probably, yeah. Unless it's like really, really summarized to the point where it's like,
like the copyright law kind of infringement gets really blurred.
It doesn't apply, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. Did you use Blinkist? I've seen the ads for it. Yeah.
I hear the ads all the time, but I've never used it.
Yeah. I don't hear the ads anymore. I don't know what happened. Maybe they've reached critical mass and they don't need to advertise as hard. But yeah, I haven't tried it. I guess the advertisements kind of turned me off from it, actually. It sounded very like, it was really trying to project an image of like like successful people. If you want to be successful, use this app. Like,
yeah,
that sounded very gimmicky to me. So I was like, I don't like what they're trying to sell here. They're trying to sell success. Now, if they were more authentic or just like honest, like, oh, you know, we're just going to help you read books fast, which is what they also put in their ads, but also this, it's like this, the overlaid image was like, you have successful people read books and this is how they do it. They use Blinkist. It's like, oh, yeah, it's, sounds gimmicky and sounds like, yeah, it was just, I just, it just threw me off a little bit.
It's like Alpha Brain.
No, Alpha Brain does, I don't think has, I don't know. To me, the impression that I get, it's not like, it doesn't say like, if you want to be successful, use Alpha Brain. Like, if you, my exposure to the ads in Alpha Brain is a Joe Rogan podcast, but usually when he was advertising like products from Onnit, he would talk about double blind placebo tests or double blind studies and whatnot, right? So he was using the research to back that up. The Blinkist one was like an appeal to some sentiment and the desire that are in our, and like saying like, if you do this, then you'll be successful. It was kind of playing on that message and it felt way too simplistic and also kind of in a way predatory on our insecurities of not being successful. So,
but I think honestly, I mean, if you're looking at the ad copy for Alpha Brain, it kind of gives that same vibe. Like,
let me the ultimate
way to get in the zone. Alpha Brain supports memory, focus, and cognitive processing speed.
Yeah, but it doesn't say like places. DCEOs use this Alpha Brain. That's kind of what Blinkist was. I think that was those were the ads that I was seeing from Blinkist. These CEOs save time by using this Blinkist app.
Joe Rogan, it seems to fire up your brain at a higher RPM level.
Yeah, he's citing statistics. The other thing was the ad Blinkist was an appeal to success. Like, it's like perfume ads, like saying, oh, if you spray this, girls are going to like you. You're going to be so attractive. They can't resist you. It's like, that's not true necessarily. Right? You're just going to smell better and you might, you know, that's going to be one component of your attractiveness that's going to improve. But girls aren't going to like suddenly flock because you have better smell. There's going to be many different things that's going to probably be appealing. Required. Pretty attractive anyway. But yeah, I just didn't like that appeal to like psychological insecurity. Like, yeah, if you do this, you'll be successful. Like, oh man, somebody might go like, oh, I'm not successful. Maybe if I do this, like, then I'll be successful. It felt a little predatory. So
yeah,
I know it's common, but you know, it doesn't make it great just because it's common. But yeah, the principles behind it are a little bit meh for me then. Can turn me off a little bit. So, So Blinkist, man, maybe not. If it just weren't for their ads and kind of their message, maybe I would have tried it. But, yeah, I think maybe the other approach that I'm going to do is maybe just read the first sentences of each paragraph in the book. And then if it interests me, then I will read it. If not, then I'll just skip it. And that's just going to be a faster way to read. I haven't tried that yet, but yeah. I'll let you know if I found that effective. But I do have, there's a FOMO when it comes to reading as well. So when you read and you're like, oh, this is interesting, a paragraph, but I think I already get the gist, so I want to skip it. But then you think, but what if there are other details that really pique my interest? And then, so you have that FOMO when you read. So I tend to read every paragraph, every sentence. And then there are times, maybe not the majority of the time, but there are times when I read the whole paragraph, like there's a nugget of information that I was like, oh, that was pretty interesting. So it only validates my FOMO that if I read the entire paragraph, there might be something that would be valuable. So if I didn't read it, then I would miss out on something valuable. So the FOMO on reading makes it difficult for me to try to read these books fast.
I took a reading class once and
a speed reading class.
It wasn't like a speed reading class. It was just more of just like, yeah, it was just like how to like just be how really? To read better and stuff like that. And
what
like
are some tips you learned?
That was actually one of the tips that they gave. It's like, don't reread things.
Okay.
You know, if you are reading something, like a lot of times what you could do is like use your finger as a guide. If you want to read faster, use your finger as a guide to like read through the different lines. And then just if you feel like you've read something already, don't go back and read it again. Just keep moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah. So what I don't reread necessarily, but it's like, I will read the first sentence of the paragraph and I'll still choose to read the rest of the paragraph. So I'm not rereading fresh material, but there are paragraphs that I read sometimes that are either repetitive in the concept that they're trying to communicate, or, you know, to me, it wasn't that interesting. So sometimes it's a waste of my time when I read the paragraphs, and they've seen, think about the grand scheme of things. If that's the approach that I have for every book, reading every paragraph, then it's going to limit the amount of books I can read throughout my lifetime. So I feel like having an approach that helps you read in a summary manner will also let you absorb as many key concepts from as many books as you can, more so than you trying to read every detail. It's a battle of breadth versus depth. Do you want to read more, or do you want to read more deeply? I don't know what's more valuable yet.
But that's to assume that everything that you're going to take in, every single thing that's written in that book, and that's probably not the case.
That's also the battle. It's like, how much will I remember? How much you won't remember, right? Because there's when something you read and you find, oh, it's very interesting. And maybe you have, like, hypothetically 10 moments of these. Maybe of these 10 moments, you're only going to remember 5. But in those moments that you read those passages, you thought they were interesting. So at the moment, they were of value to you. But you won't know if they're going to be in your memory or whatnot. You don't know which ones are going to stick to your memory until time passes. So you can't make a decision based on what you're going to remember, because you don't know what you're going to remember until later.
Yeah.
It's a hard call to make.
I think you're being efficient with your use of time. Like, I think it's hard to read a lot of books. Like, you really have to, like, schedule and carve out that time to read. And that's something that I've been really trying to force myself to do. Cause, you know, for me, historically, I've always done, like, audiobooks and stuff like that. Like, consuming things via audio is just easier for me. But I think also at the same time, again, like, how do you got to curate the kind of books that you read, right? So you're already doing some sort of curation. So to curate even more, to only focusing on the things that are important to you, I think that's just, to me, that seems like you're being more efficient.
Yeah. So I want to do that, but I don't think I do, because you have FOMO, because you don't know until you've read the thing that you're reading whether it was valuable to you or not. So you must first spend the effort, then do a value assessment. You can't do a value assessment before spending the effort in reading. You know what I mean? If you don't read a sentence, how do you know if that sentence is valuable? You don't. So you have to kind of read it for you to have a confirmation of whether that sentence was valuable or not.
And if it's not valuable, was it a waste of time reading that sentence?
Kind of, yes, right? Yes, but you don't know if it was a waste of time or not. It could have been. It's before you read it, it's a probability game. After you read it, it's a certainty. And because I have a certain FOMO of, like, oh man, what if I miss out on a detail that's, like, really important? And I'm the kind that will, like, highlight one sentence maybe and go, like, yeah, wow, that was really nice. I really got what that person was trying to communicate because of this sentence. So because of the fear of missing out of a valuable sentence, you will spend the effort and then probably more often than not read things that you didn't find as valuable and that you won't remember. But it's just trying to guess the future, which you can't do. So you prepare for the future by expending wasteful effort in the present moment, which you will realize is wasteful only in the future. It's not a paradox, but
it's a catch-22.
Yes. It's like the catch-22 of reading. Maybe I'm overanalyzing reading, but it's after I read something, after I read a book, I kind of reflect back on how I read my book very briefly. How I read it, and whether that approach was sound, and if I could have saved time. And always I come out with a sense of regret, thinking, like, man, I think I spent way too much time reading this book. Like, even now I have still two books that are pending reading, mm-hmm. Thinking Fast and Slow, which I highly recommend to many people, especially in my field that have to make decisions really fast.
Yeah.
And also The Brief History of Humankind. I'm like at the 40% mark in each of those books. But I've been reading those books for, like, it's maybe been 5 months or 4 months. It's been a while.
Yeah.
But I feel like I've gotten the gist of it, but the FOMO of it, like, what if there's more in this book that's going to be really valuable? So I keep reading it.
I mean, I think in that instance, it makes sense to keep reading, but if it was more,
you don't know, we don't know.
That's the same. Like, I'm reading, Once Upon a Time on Wall Street.
Is that a fictional book, or is that a?
It's nonfiction.
Once Upon a Time in Wall Street. That sounds like a Quentin Tarantino movie that meets a Michael Lewis book.
Very far from it. It's Peter Lynch, who's like the Peter Lynch.
Lynch? That sounds familiar. Yeah.
He's like the president of Fidelity's like 401k like retirement department.
Nice. Taking care of many Americans and their retirement income. Peter Lynch, mutual fund manager. I see. So he just probably just communicates what finance concepts and how to invest.
Yeah. But it's like a lot of like everybody's kind of saying the same things, you know, like if you really boil it down.
Right. Like,
fundamentals and, you know, don't listen to the media and all these different things. And so it's like
different people communicating that message, but maybe with different stories.
Yeah.
Different details. Yeah. You know, those things I feel like we could skip, but you don't know if it's the same thing unless you read it. So you spend the effort and then only you, it's just this mistime thing. Yeah. It's like the timing doesn't align so that it helps you maximize your time and the value of your time.
Yeah.
How do we solve for that problem? Like if we solve for that problem, we would be able to compete with apps like Blinkist.
Yeah, that is true.
If we can. Well, but I guess that's what Blinkist does. It tells you what the important parts are and then just...
That they think like, are important. But again, like you're saying, right, is if you had read the book, there might have been other important things that you missed out on because...
Yeah. So customized real-time feedback as to what the reader, considering all their preferences and their personalities and interests, should read in a book. So the reading path for each reader would be different. That'll be an interesting idea. It's probably possible one day, especially with artificial intelligence. I think it'd be possible. As long as whatever program you have has data as to like what passages in the book you liked. And they can use that data and say, oh, this guy liked this sort of passages and he really liked this sentence. He's probably not going to like these sentences. So they'll just like black out certain areas of a book where you don't have to read.
That's we shouldn't be talking about that. Yeah, because that's a business idea that somebody could be taking.
I don't know if I'll be able to execute this. Just take that idea. I don't want to be... So when I think about like having my own business, you already have your own business. So that's awesome. But when I think about having my own business, which is one of my aspirations to have, I don't want to run a business that I am not passionate about, the cause I'm not passionate about. And although reading has value for me, it's not something I'm passionate about.
Why are you passionate doing
about
it?
Building? What?
Why are you doing it if you're not passionate about it?
It brings value to me, but I'm not passionate about facilitating the experience of the reader, right? Okay. Which is what this business idea was about.
Yeah.
I would draw value from it, but I'm not passionate enough. I'm not passionate enough. It's like saying, hey, do you like powerlifting? You probably do, right? But do you want to be this pioneer powerlifting and discover new techniques and then promulgate it to other people and then have an innovating training program, maybe for some, but to you not necessarily, but you still draw value from powerlifting, right? Like powerlifting. Yeah. So it's that. I think I'm passionate to an extent, but I'm not past the threshold passion to be like an entrepreneur in the space.
Yeah. It's not worth the investment for you.
Given my passion, to try to start a business idea and dedicate my life to building that. Yeah, not really. Yeah. It's almost like a marriage.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Man, I thought we were going to talk about Elon Musk in this podcast, but man, we spent an hour almost talking about something that we did not plan on talking about. That's crazy. Wow. I was like, we'll talk about these things for like maybe a few minutes. Now, boom, check the clock, time flew.
Yeah. I think also, too, we've had quite a few, like our schedule for recording has been like had these huge gaps. So I think as we get back to a more regular schedule, that will be.
Well, no, dude, we recorded 2 weeks ago. That's a part of our regular schedule.
But we do every other week.
Yeah, 2 weeks ago.
But that was the first time. So before that, when the last time
we were like a holiday, so the schedule was really regular. Maybe, I don't know. I like these free flowing conversations too. So I don't know if it's worse that we deviated from this topic necessarily, but it wasn't planned. But I don't know if that makes it worse. Many things that are not planned can be better than what it planned and it went the way it was planned. Yeah. We can talk about Elon Musk another time. I was doing some research on him. I have some tabs open on Elon Musk from moneycontrol.com and inc.com. And then I have another tab open from history.com of Thomas Edison's history. Because I want to make the, I think, argument that Elon Musk is the GOAT, greatest of all time, entrepreneur that we have seen. Definitely the modern era, but you know, it depends when we're drawing what the modern era, what the time boundaries are for the modern era. But then the what did you say, thief? What is thief? Is that an acronym for crazy?
No, he's a thief.
Elon Musk is a thief? What? Why do you say that?
No, I'm not. What do you mean? I'm not being 100% serious.
Okay. No matter what, some ideas like he has to borrow the idea of four wheels to build a car. So he's going to have to borrow the idea, which is not something that he created by himself, right? So there is some borrowing going on. If you have violated the patent, then you know you could be considered an idea thief. But to me, GOAT and entrepreneur in the modern era, way ahead of even the likes of Steve Jobs, in my opinion. So if I look at history and think who might, you know, contend Elon Musk for that title, I'm thinking, okay, maybe Thomas Edison, because Thomas Edison invented a shit ton. And I don't know the full scope of things that he, or was it Nikola Tesla, right?
Maybe
he
Nikola did too. Tesla was somebody who pioneer a lot of ideas that were rejected for various different reasons.
Yeah, so so I have to look at that as well too. Benjamin Franklin, I don't think he invented a lot of things, right? But
what about Bezos?
Electricity. Who?
We're gonna act like Bezos didn't do anything.
What did Bezos do?
He transformed the shipping and logistics
world.
Yeah, dude, that's crazy.
That's it.
Come on, you can't tell me that's it. Shipping and logistics. When all of these companies are getting affected by shipping logistics, Bezos has his fleet. Right. 18-wheelers.
UPS has been reliable, even with increasing demand. You're right. I mean, that's great from a business perspective. Oh my God, so impressive from logistics and business and delivery supply chain.
AWS? AWS?
Yeah, I don't, but is that innovative? That's just what? Web service? I don't know what AWS says. I'm not going to pretend that I know what that is. But I imagine it's some sort of like software that enables web service, right? Which is not innovative. A lot of web services out there that, you know, is democratized and a lot of people can use.
In 2020, there were 1 million AWS users.
Dude, that's like saying in 2020, there were 1 billion TikTok users. Is that really impressive?
You know who is using AWS? Adobe, Airbnb, BMW, AOL, Comcast, ESPN, Financial Times.
Yeah, but you going through that list.
Tata Motors.
I've heard that name so much. That's a car company, right?
Yeah. Okay. I think they're doing electric cars too.
Oh my. Yeah. But why are you and I briefly talked about this in a certain podcast episode. Why are all companies now going into the electric vehicle business? Because Elon Musk showed that you can make electric cars in a very competitive manner with other cars. And I think the sequence of events supports that. The hypothesis that Elon Musk really paved the way. Anyway, but the list of clients that you're saying that use AWS, it only demonstrates a business value, like the value that it brings to customers of AWS. There's an echo going on, but I don't know why I hear myself. But what the value that Elon Musk brought, you're not just talking about Tesla, dude. But let's talk about the just one value stream beyond business value that each of his company brings. Tesla, environmental, reducing carbon emissions. Two, SpaceX, interplanetary travel to be able to help secure a long-term future for humankind. Just be say that sentence that this one man, I mean, I'm sure he has a team, but this is one man helped pioneer. Just sounds ridiculous to me. So it comes straight out of a science fiction novel.
But he didn't even, okay, first of all, he wasn't even the one that started Tesla. If he had started it, okay, I would say sure. You know what? Dude. That's great. But he's basically a financier.
Let me bring this hypothetical. What's a technology that you really like? That you think, Apple? Okay, let's say Apple, okay?
Sure.
Let's say Apple. You really like the iPhones. Let's say Apple was founded by someone else other than Steve Jobs. Now, the things that Apple is creating, maybe they were actually creating like shitty Motorola-like phones, okay? Sorry, Motorola, but you know, your phones are now, you know, not being used as much. But let's say that's what Apple was making, okay?
Yeah.
And then Steve Jobs comes along and suddenly things change. You know, the Apple now is designed the way it does. Are you really going to credit the success of Apple if the new design that he created, which he did create, has suddenly takes flight and is now hugely, immensely popular and also is now really the primary means of communication for many people? Are you not going to credit the success of Apple to him just because he didn't found it, although he was the one that brought the ideas that made Apple as successful as it did?
It's limited, but like in terms of like technology, the whoever created or pioneered that technology is the one that should get the credit. Yeah, so Elon in this
Musk.
Instance,
Elon Musk. Elon Musk
he didn't even start Tesla. He became a majority shareholder and kicked out the founders.
Okay, you know what? We're gonna research this.
That's what happened.
No, yeah, but why didn't Tesla become super popular when the founders were there then? Huh? Because they're probably
they had a car. No, the Tesla Roadster that was a thing before Elon Musk is being like one of the fastest 0-60 cars.
I might be wrong with this, but I don't believe the Roadster was as effective and as great of a car as it was before Elon Musk came on board. My very layman's comparison would be that the Roadster before Elon Musk came on board was really like the Toyota Prius. And after Elon Musk, then really became a Tesla, the Tesla that we know today. If that's the case, then we can probably credit the success of Tesla and how groundbreaking it was to Elon Musk. Unqualified. No limit. Unqualified. All success to you, Elon Musk. Anyway, so there's Tesla, SpaceX. I mean, you're just arguing on. Just one picture.
You're attributing something to him that he did. He was not the founder.
Okay, let's take your argument to the extreme.
He's an innovator.
That he brought to Tesla. He innovated Tesla, right? You give him credit for revolutionizing the electric vehicle industry then. Anyway, we can come back to this, but that's a preview for next week's podcast or the podcast in 2 weeks. SpaceX, Tesla, and then also Neuralink. What is this going to bring? It's going to help also treat a lot of ailments that human beings face that a lot of traditional medicine and traditional therapy does not help with, including paralysis.
I bet
that's a non-business value that really brings value to humankind. And there's also hypertunnel. And that one really is just logistics, but
hey. Hypertunnel hasn't had much good news lately.
It's one idea out of four. The fact that this guy is trying to like transport people in from one city to another city within a different state in 90 minutes is fucking crazy. That's so ambitious. And the fact that he did that idea that nobody else did while he has other three crazy ideas that he's running with. I mean, the numbers already and just the scale and the depth of what he's doing, I think just makes the argument so much better. Because for Bezos, what we just said was, he just revolutionized the logistics industry. That's it. Distinct values to humankind.
Online shopping, the logistics industry, that's two.
Business, commercial,
books,
still commercial.
Tesla's commercial. Neuralink will be commercial product.
What is a different value that Tesla brings? Environmental, carbon emissions, right? What other value than commercial is Jeff Bezos' ideas bring?
Bezos, his commitment to you, environmental, protecting the environment. And we're going to go in on this.
You come prepared. All right, come prepared. I love this. It's going to be a debate. It's going to be the trial of Elon Musk, or not the trial of Elon Musk. We'll call it something else. But anyway, good preview. Clearly, you and I have different opinions, but I'm already looking forward to it. All right. Shall we wrap it up? This was fun.
I guess that's it.
Yeah. What is the name of your podcast so that people can check you out if they want to?
I need to change it. You can find it right now as Create as Prescribed.
But it will be, are you okay to share what it will be or not yet?
Not yet, but okay. You can find right. it for the Create time
prescribed,
being.
And then check out hypekit.co if you're into curated shoes that curated are rare.
Yep. Apparel and accessories.
Yes, and feel free to follow because David has a different and larger vision for that company as it goes forward. All right. I think that's it, dude.
That's it.
Fun convo. I'll talk to you later. Never understood that phrase, but yeah, take it easy. Enjoy the weekend, dude.
Later.
All right. See ya.